Hello, welcome to episode number 112 of the Epilogue Podcast. I am your host, Simon Head. I am suffering with a cold. So you can actually hear in the recording I just did that I also had the same cold a couple of days ago. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Go to audibletrial.com and get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. So go to audibletrial.com/epilogue. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your Android, your iPhone, your Android Kindle, any other thing like that. So go there, audibletrial.com/epilogue. This episode is also brought to you in part by Amazon. Go to, actually there's an easy way to do it now. If you go to epilogue.ca/Amazon, it'll take you directly to the Amazon link. Bookmark that link and you will be supporting the show. Anybody else, if you're in America or from the UK, you can go to epilogue.ca and click on the banners located on the right side. Whether you're from the United States, Canada, or the UK, you can bookmark those link banners. And every time you shop on Amazon, you'll be supporting the show as well. If you're interested in pledging to the show on a monthly basis, go to patreon.com/epilogue. Patreon, patreon.com. You can pledge or as little or as much as you want on a monthly basis to help with my hosting and gas fees. It costs money to do this stuff, you know. Like, you got to drive around, you got to meet people, you got to buy lunches, you got to, you know, it's a, you know, it costs money. Yeah, thanks to all the patrons I have. They're awesome people. This episode is also brought to you by Inside Recorders. Inside Recorders is a place to have your album mixed, mastered, and recorded. You can actually, there's three different versions of it. There's a version that comes to your house. That's the new version right now. And there's a version, there's an actual studio located about 20 minutes from my house. That's actually in a barn. And it's right now in the winter, it's too cold. Too cold. So the option is I can come to you and record your band or your music. And the other version is if you want to actually record a live show, I'm set up to do that as well. Go to insiderecorders.com/rates for more details. If you're interested in purchasing a t-shirt, go to epilogue.ca/shop, or you can buy my Foursquare discography for $20. If you are, everybody's on iTunes, but go to iTunes to rate, subscribe, and review the show. Give it 5 stars, please. Don't forget to tell friends. Like the show on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/epiluckpod and follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666. Today's guest is Mr. Steve Kreklo. Steve Kreklo and I go back, like most of the guests, we go back 20 years or more. Steve is from the, I guess, the Bowmanville, Oshawa, Clarington area. And Steve has been playing guitar his whole life. He's a very humble man. He writes and scores for TV, as well as being in Chaos's guitar player. Anybody from America might not know Chaos, but Chaos is a pretty cool musician up here in Canada, and he's a cool dude as well. So everybody, here he is, my friend Steve Kreklo on the Epilogue Podcast. Oh, Steve Kreklo. How long have we known each other for? I think I say it's 20 years almost now.
Yeah, like, I think I maybe first met you at the Eclipse in Oshawa.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been it.
Yeah, you're doing sound for Pseudonym.
Yeah.
Tom and my first band.
That's right, yeah. Pseudonym, yeah, that's right. And I remember there's this altercation because I was supposed to record you guys.
Oh, for the Moonroom compilation. The Moonroom
comp, yeah. And that's good coffee. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen, and you guys were so pissed at me. I remember that. Do you remember that?
Like, it happened. Somebody recorded us.
I think you guys ended up just recording yourself. But in all honesty, in that day, the day I was supposed to record that, one of my best friends was killed at work. So my shit was just, like, destroyed. I had nothing. I tried to do the one day, and I just bailed on the second and third day, which is supposed to be, I think, when you guys were coming in.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't deal. So, You know, so if there's any sort of consolation, there was a lot of personal.
Valid excuse.
It was pretty brutal, but those were good old days because you could be 20 years old and be mad at each other, and then it was done. It was over with.
Yeah, easy salad days type problems, you
Yeah, I
know?
know. Yeah, it's right. Like just getting angry at somebody, hopefully didn't turn into like a big thing. Yeah. Because we've all had friends. We've been friends. We've had other friends, and friends drop in and they leave and they come back, and that's always great. But there's always like that, well, if we aren't still friends after 20 years, then I don't know. What, is it worth the energy?
I guess that's true. I don't know. I tend to think of all those little things that everything seems like a problem at the time, and the next day it's the most trivial thing. It's like, why was I so angry and so resentful at this person for nothing?
Yeah, absolutely. When you think of the grand scheme of things, it is for nothing. Yeah. And, we all have, like, it's funny because we all fall in and out of friendships with each other, because I think we probably talked maybe 3 times between like 2001 and 2006 or 7 or something. There was this time, I think, and everybody sort of just switched off.
Yeah, well, we lived across the street from each other during like a year of that.
That's right,
Yeah,
yeah.
but after that it was like, yeah, I mean, we all were doing our own things, and like, I mean, I think I moved back to Oshawa for a few years, back to my job selling cell phones after my failure to launch attempt at a music career like in the early 2000s, and then it was like, okay, back to square one. And then, I started touring with Tom, and that just sort of went off, and then we reconnected.
Now, do you find with music, like, I think music's mostly made up of failures anyways. Like, you make little failures to make a good small victory, but you need to go through the failures before you actually can enjoy the victory. Does that make sense?
No, I don't know what you're talking. Now, of course, yeah, it's like my career is just a bunch of, failures that have taught me a little thing here and there, and then okay, I know not to step on that nail next time, and you just learn how to. That's the only way to learn, and I almost feel, anyone who's had success early on, it's just sort of like, well, you didn't fail before it mattered, or you didn't. What am I saying? I'm like, they had success, so they didn't learn how to fail. So when they
It
fail,
was bad.
it's gonna be bad.
Yeah, it's very bad. Yeah, well, we all, like you said, I mean, it's kind of what makes you stronger. And obviously, this is all like no duh stuff, but a lot of people that we know gave up. They're like, I don't want to deal with the failure. Like, I'm sick and tired of the failure, and I'm gonna leave. And it's like wearing track pants to the movies.
Totally. And I mean, if I had the option to do that,
Yeah.
I might have taken it. But
Well, yeah, if something career-wise came along, like something that was possibly more interesting, obviously, because we all just gravitate to things that interest us.
I guess so. Like, my thing is, like, I tried to do other stuff. And even before, like, even out of high school, I'm like, okay, bands were fun. Now it's time to go get my computer science degree and put on the big boy pants. And that failed because, I'm lazy. I was too lazy to do the work. I had always coasted by, and basically I fell flat on my ass and failed out of school miserably. I don't think I pa passed one course in my final semester. And so,
But you're a smart guy. Like, well,
sure.
what would make that happen? Like, why? Complacency.
I never learned how to work hard, because I was smart. I was always able to work smart instead of working hard early on in my life. So in high school, it was really easy for me to do, to not do homework and not study and then still get A's and whatever. And so that sort of mentality of I'm smarter than these people, I can outsmart them. Once you're leveled up to the level of smart people, they don't, there's a harder work that is necessary to,
Right.
and so, like music was like always the distraction, and it became the thing I focused on to, deal with the monotony of school and whatever. And it's sort of like, and then when I failed at a school, it's like, okay, what job can I get? So I'm working at the mall selling phones and, wearing a stupid like Sears tie and shirt that I hate, and it's like
The
music is my
escape.
solace. And I was just too hard-headed to quit for long enough that I eventually got somewhere, I guess.
Well, you're right. Every little decision in life you make, or every little progress you make, you can, if you're, and I think you're smart enough to basically parlay that into a career. And whether or not you're going to deliver pizzas during the day and write music at night, or the other way around, there is a reason for why you're still playing music. And the music is something that's always been the core to you, as me too. Like,
Yeah,
there's
for sure.
things revolve around that. And then and there's something like these little rewards where you're like, ah, I can't believe I'm not, I'm still doing this, like after all these years,
Totally. Yes, for sure. Yeah, for me, it's literally the only thing that I care about enough to want to really work my ass off for. Because, as you get older, you realize that your time is limited. Every day is like, you really gotta choose wisely what you focus on, what you spend your time on, because, you only get one go around. So I don't know. That's no duh stuff as well, but whatever.
That's true, but there's a lot of people out there that will have excitement working in the post office. Like Cleve. Cleve, he worked in the post office for 30 years and retired, and now he's more happy now playing more shows because he went through the process of being a postie, which I don't think I could do.
I wish I could do it.
Yeah,
It would be
right?
so, like just to have something that is such a simple thing that like that's only one part of my life, whereas the music is like it's great, it's fun, it's exciting, whatever, you get to follow your dreams, but it's all encompassing and you sleep next to it every night. It's like your art is haunting you, and it's like it's the am I good enough stuff that you got to deal with. You don't have to deal with that at the post office. It's like,
No.
of course I'm fucking good enough.
Yeah, of course, because you work in there. Yeah, and then at the other time, there's more room for you to think about your art. Like Rude, from Arson, he works in the government job and he writes lyrics all day because, and he's going to retire and he's going to be done, but he's
That's
been a punk
awesome.
rocker his whole life, but he used normalcy or whatever, normality to keep his punk rock isms alive. Like, that's kind of cool, right? Because you're actually using the system
You're using
to.
it as a foil, or as a,
Yeah.
as a muse almost.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what he said. He just wrote lyrics all day long on his little yellow post-it notes, And
Wicked.
yeah. And so there's those people, like those people. And I see, for me, like I still mix bands, I still record bands. I don't think, I jokingly say I could go work at Walmart, but Walmart won't hire me. But I could do that because my big dream now is to have a job I can ride a 10-speed to. Like, that would be great one
Wouldn't
day.
it?
Yeah, right? Anything, So, when you play, when you've played music and you're just a naturally gifted musician, and there's people out there who are that. And so do you think that's what sort of didn't help you sort of go out and just sort of get a normal job, or was this something like was where the
I don't know. It's sort of like I tried to get a normal job,
Yeah.
and it just sort of, every time, like even at the cell phone store, they offered me manager, and then the next week I got offered like, hey, you want to join the Chaos Band and go tour Australia? So there's little carrots dangling off in the distance. It's like, fuck, okay, I'm back in.
And when you keep a job you can quit, you can go and work for a Chaos, and you can go do things like Al, or my buddy Al. He was trying to get a real job and couldn't do it, and he got a real job because he quit the band. You know what I mean? And he's content now,
Yep, that's great. That's
And
great.
so there's a lot of people out there who it's just not made for. They're not made for that. That they don't want to do it because they don't want. I don't know. It's like, I don't know. Is it close to like people who are almost professional hockey players? Like they love hockey so much that they end up hating it at the end, or is it?
Yeah, except that, you know, like if you're a musician and you love music, you can find a way to do it even later on in life. But where you're as a hockey player,
You have a certain period of time, yeah.
yeah, you kind of have to. Well, I guess even as a musician, like, I
Shelf
mean,
life.
now that I have, you know, way less hair and it's mostly gray, it's like probably not going to go get another go around in like a pop punk
You may want to try and go
band.
out there to the moon room, make another,
Yeah.
well, even though it's a man shelter now.
Yeah.
But there is a certain, you're right, there is a certain shelf life to being in a rock and roll outfit, especially just the whole, well, I don't know. You could probably, if you were on a tour bus and staying in hotels, that's something that you can do. But if you're going to Europe and sleeping on floors, that might not be
Well, I mean, the sad thing is that to most music fans, to a lot of music fans, I don't want to say most, but to many, it's like the allure of rock and roll, the thing that gets them out to the shows, that makes them want to buy the merch and watch the videos, it's the allure of youth and the allure of just like freedom. It's like these are people, they're young, they're good looking, they're doing what they want. Girls want to get with them, guys want to be them.
Yeah.
And then once you're not that, it's like, well, you have to have something else.
Yeah.
So if you're, let's say you're Billy Bragg, you're politically hip, you're, you know, you have messages to say and whatever. Or let's say you're, you know, in a band that was cool and people will always come back to relive those memories. Or let's say you're a virtuoso. You got that. If you're a great songwriter, there's that. But I mean, for me personally, I'm a moderately talented self-taught guitar player who made his sort of way playing in bands and being a sideman. It's like I don't have a future in bands, like as a leader. Like I don't want to write my own songs and go on tour and have to sell that every night and whatever. So
That's a lot of work unto its own.
it's like I don't
Yeah.
know, like
I know
I
that word
much
for
I,
sand.
oh man, yeah, like I had a lot of fun in that Europe tour that we did, but I could see that you were having far less fun because it's your deal and you went
Yeah.
over there to, you know,
To try and do
sell
something.
your art
Yeah.
and it's heartbreaking,
Well,
man.
it is. There's a lot of well, see, you know, that just that at that tour compared to other tours, there was the care factor was quite low. It was just the fact of just getting there and being there was the experience
It
to
was so much fun,
became a
man.
different experience for me. And if it was good, an interesting experience to watch someone who hasn't done it that way, who's done it before, but sees things in a different light. So for me to see you and Tim and Phil like looking at things for the first time, it's like this is cool stuff, you know? Like and I am glad because I was worried there halfway through. I'm like, well, maybe this isn't what anybody thought
No.
was this was gonna be. And you know, and I remember you were in Ajax playing like a warm-up show, and you're like, we're playing kind of to nobody. And you're like, is this gonna be kind of like a sign of things to come? I'm like, yeah, probably it's gonna be a lot like this.
You know what? It's like a, you know, as it was a, I you couldn't buy a better vacation.
Absolutely.
You're basically doing like you're doing a European tour with no consequences,
No.
you know, like maybe you lose a bit of money, but it's
Sure.
not like, you know, I had so much fun doing that
Yeah.
and I didn't care if there was nobody there. And
Yeah.
like it was a little bit out of my comfort zone once in a while, but that's the only way you get to have the adventures. If you push yourself out of that little sort of like you know, like I'm so comfortable here, but it's boring.
Yeah, I know exactly. And truthfully, I wouldn't was not expecting to have basements that didn't have heat in them, that we had to light a fire to maintain the heat.
Yeah,
I
but
wasn't
now.
expecting that. So when we got there and we started doing that, I was like, oh, we'll just deal with that. But I do remember that walk we took down into town, and it's like snow everywhere. I wasn't expecting snow, even though I
Right.
should have. And that was to me, that was like that's a special moment in my life. You know, it's like we got to go down and experience something. We're not tourists at that point. We're actually immersed ourselves into this little tiny town in
Totally.
Italy and just walking around looking at stuff. And
Totally.
yeah, you know, and I wouldn't do it next week. I wouldn't do it again. You know what I mean? Maybe I'd do it as just an acoustic or something, go out there and meet some
Yeah.
friends again.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's all about right now. It's, you know, and for you, how many times you toured Canada?
Oh, man.
Has it become exciting? Is it still like, is it just something like, plowing the field, or is
Yeah.
there any excitement?
Like, I mean, the last couple times I did it was as a tech with Sloan.
Yeah.
So, it's a different game. You know, on the upside, there's the you do every night without the dread of where will people show up, which affects you, whether, you know, you're invested in it or like as a leader or as a sideman. It's still a bummer to play to nobody when, you know, you hoped people would show up. So that thing is gone. But on the other side, it's like the whole reason that it's fun to do that as a band is the glory of and the sort of, you know, the victory of playing a show every night. It's like it's so much fun, and to sit behind the amp stacks and tune guitars is still fun, and you're with all your favorite people. But I don't know, it's not appealing to me in the same way. So
It's your job. It's your, you know, and I think we
yeah.
were talking a little bit before we turned the mics on that you have a tough time sort of getting in from one thing and going into the other. So to be an artist, to being a
Totally.
tech, you gotta have to prepare yourself, and I'm with you on that too.
Yeah,
Like,
there's like a 2 week ramp up, ramp down, right? I'm fucked if I try and write, because like I have to write commercials and TV show stuff now, and it's like I can't write for a week after I'm, because I just have the post-tour blues, and I'm just, my body's recovering, and I'm, you know, I'm finally catching up on sleep, and to go right into something else, it's too much of a head fake, I think.
Now, see, because for me, I'm in the same boat. Because sometimes when I, but I find sometimes that stuff is inspiring to come back after working with a band. Sometimes I can be inspired to make that type of music because I've been around it for so many times and or for so many weeks at a time.
I'm really cautious when I write, and I've sort of come to the realization that that's just my process. It's like I can't go full speed into something because there's a lot of foolish pride that sort of comes out, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm the best, blah, blah, blah. But like, I need to go through, like, my stages are, you know, you're dipping your pinky toe in the pool, and you're like, okay, what's this gonna be? And then you start to write, and then you backtrack, and then you write, and you backtrack, and you get to a point where it's a thing, and then it's like, this is shit, I'm gonna start over. And so I have to take a break. I go and play some Super Mario Maker, or I have a nap, or I go to bed. I wake up and I'm like, now I can evaluate this. So I'll, and then I need to, you know, I just need to stew with the stuff. And then it eventually becomes good. And you eventually are satisfied with it enough
So
to
you
whatever.
self-edit and you edit and you bring
Yeah.
it back
And
in.
it's just that big process that you can't skip. And so for me to go from a tour into like, buh, create, deliver, buh, 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 it never works.
Yeah. And I think that's the difference between me and you, because I'm inspired to write, and I'll write two songs in 2 days, and then I won't write something for like a month because I'm not thinking about it. So when I'm inspired to write, I just go and write it. And then that way it's easier because then I've put it away and it's there for like 6 months of sitting in on a hard drive somewhere, and then I can come back to it and go, hey, that was kind of good. And that was horrible. You know what I mean? So it's, you know.
My creativity is forced. And that's another thing why I like doing TV stuff, is because you're like, I'm forced with this, my new show with Ollie, I'm fo forced to write 11 minutes of stuff every week, and there's no option to skip it or to,
No.
you know, whatever. It's like I don't get to choose when I'm creative, so I just have to give myself enough time to do the dance, you know.
Well, that's exciting stuff though, because if you put yourself to a deadline and then you come out with something, then you're like, oh, okay, that's something that I created within a period of 3 days, as opposed to waiting for like a month for something to come into your brain. That's different because you're a professional working musician, you know, and that's cool, right? That's to me, I can't do that. I have time.
I have no choice. But if I didn't do that, I would never, like, I don't write. I don't write unless I have to.
And so when you're as like a guitar player playing in, say, the Carnations or things like that, you were adding musical stuff into that, right?
I was trying to, I don't know, like,
A few songs at least here and there.
yeah, I was trying to, just trying to, like, you know, stake out some real estate in that band, and it was fun, but think Tom is such a creative guy that like he needs to be the guy doing all the fun stuff, and it's like he needs guys who can, see his vision through. And it took me a while to respect that.
Yeah, I bet, right?
Because, we started out as just equals. We're gonna be in this band, and I sang as many songs as he did. And, he has to be that guy. And whether I want to be that guy or not, it's sort of like it's more for the good of the project, you gotta find a role that works in the project.
Everybody needs a little job or a role
Yeah.
in their
Yeah.
spot.
And I had so much fun doing the stuff, and I had a lot of production ideas, a lot of arrangement ideas and stuff that, Tom let me have in the band. And I was listening to In Good Time, our like only full length record, I guess. I guess we did a few 9-song ones, but yeah, like In Good Time was the last thing we recorded before we broke up, and it's cool to hear it years later, like 12 years, 13 years removed from making it, because it's like, wow, this is like something that I hated for a while. And I thought it was just kind of like really simple. It's just like, oh, I'm past that. But like, it's something that could not be remade in the same way because it's like, it's a different animal. Like, we did that record. That's the last record I ever did without Pro Tools. And we recorded it all to tape. And even then, that was like sort of a weird thing for a band to not want to edit and stuff because it was so easy and so available. But now it's like, you don't. I don't like I've since then I've never made a record just to tape.
Me neither. The last one we did was in 2001.
Yeah.
So it would have been the same time. It was the same studio too,
Isn't it
with the
different?
same guy mixing
Isn't it weird now? It's
it.
like
It is weird.
songs are written in the arrange window. They're not written in the rehearsal space.
No, and that's what I'm missing, because I tried to put a thing together where people could get together once a week, but nobody has time, man. Like, nobody has scheduled time where they can
No,
carve out 2 or 3 hours.
and the other thing is it's not a collaboration anymore. It's like there's gotta be one guy, and I think that's the easiest way for bands to work is there's a guy, he writes or she writes the songs, and then the other people serve that.
Oh, it's definitely easier.
Yeah.
Because when everybody writes, like, imagine Sloan, some of the crazy screamers they've had over the period where
Well,
they all
even
are equally as strong songwriters, where they have to, like,
sure.
contribute equally, which is why they all got their own record at one point.
Yeah, well, even like for the last I don't know for how long, but like they play on each other's stuff, but it's mostly just one guy's vision, and
Taking
it's
control,
yeah,
yeah.
and that's the reason they've been able to continue. And but for bands to like everyone's got input, and the drummer gets to pick his fills and where they go and all that stuff, and the bass player, he wants to write a new bridge. It's like it's
There's a
so
lot of
complicated,
aggravation.
but the songs were good. It's like it's that struggle sometimes will pay off, and I kind of miss that way of working.
Yeah, just do I. Because for the past 10 years, I've been the only guy
Yeah.
sometimes playing all the instruments. And I miss that. I miss the human element because the closest thing I ever got was having been sending you a song now and you played solo on it. We're not even in the same room. I mean,
No,
like, look where we're
man.
at now.
Yeah.
And it was, and thankfully, it was brilliantly beautiful. I was just playing it to somebody the other day, actually, the one solo. It's like, but that is collaboration to me because it's like, oh,
Sure.
you're putting your
Sure.
taste on it, and you're taking
Yep.
your strengths and adding it to the music. But if you would have said, oh, I think it needs to be 8 bars shorter, then it would have been, well, thank you very much. And yeah, we're just gonna do it this way. Thanks for your input.
Yeah, but it's like that's a decision that would have made been, like when you are writing in the rehearsal room, it's like you're writing in parallel rather than in series. So things happen so much faster when you go in parallel, when there's like four things feeding off each other and whatever. And now it's like it's such a big process. Like records take longer now. Like that's the irony
Isn't
of
it
Pro
crazy?
Tools.
Yeah.
It's
Because you
like
have more time to ponder. Well, there's all those people that do solo records that just sit in their basement for like a year with the same songs and
Pushing waveforms around. Well, I like the look of this sausage better than this one.
So they just keep playing with it until they have to put it out, you know,
Yeah.
like, you know, but, and for me, they don't need, I mean, I don't need to put anything out, but I like writing songs. But also, I was trying, you know, like I said, I found a bunch of old songs and I put them all together and they all have some continuity to it. And I just started reaching out to people. And so now I have a different drummer playing. I have the same drummer playing on the same thing, which is a first. Hopefully the same bass player, but he lives in Buffalo. And hopefully the same guitar players and the same singer. So it could be a band. Doesn't need to be, but it could be a band. And that is as close as I can get to a collaboration now.
Yeah.
Because we don't.
That's just the world we live in, though. It's like those are the creative restrictions that are imposed on us by time and space and money and whatnot, and everyone's got jobs and we all it was a lot easier when, we're all living with our parents and,
270 steps away.
exactly.
Where we counted.
Oh man.
It was
Those are the days.
Those are
We had
great days.
fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We didn't take too much time to actually jam at that point because we could have.
We could have,
We could have.
but everyone was in their own, the thing I don't miss about those days is that everyone was so like passively aggressively competitive. It's just like, oh, your band's opening for this band, eh? Well, we got a record deal.
It's true.
We're on Maple Music, Maple Nationwide, Maple.
Same with us.
Yeah.
Well, we got a Swedish record
And you
label.
don't say that to people, but
No.
you're thinking it.
Yeah, I know. It's
You
true.
can't help it because it's like, you have like bands who see each other and, it's basically a, okay, everyone pull out your dongs and let's see who's got the longest one. And it's I don't know. Like it's something that is seeming like when I look back on it, it's so petty. It's like we're all in the same fucking shit trench.
There was the underlying sense of community, though, in a way. Like there was some like,
Maybe.
I think in a way the studio I had kind of drew people together that normally necessarily wouldn't be
Yeah,
drawn together.
totally.
Like you guys knew the Weakerthans guys,
Totally,
you
yeah.
know, and that
And we ended
became a
up touring.
so that became a good sort of connection and a touch point.
I met Kastner there for the first time, and just like yeah, so many good memories of those days.
It so but you kind of like you said that going back to originally what you're saying, the sort of like just being there's things there's problems were so much more simpler back then. Like anything that became a problem was really I don't remember having really cross words with you guys after the big fallout. I think there was a little bit of weirdness after we did the EP, and then something happened, and I don't know,
I don't know.
no, Tom was mad at me because we were recording some Kastner stuff, and I was a little starstruck because I had
Right,
John
right,
Kastner
right.
and Mark Arnold in my studio,
Yeah.
and little Tom. And now Tom's like probably more successful. Well, I don't know. Kastner's pretty successful.
Gastner's pretty
He's pretty
successful.
successful.
But Tom wrote probably the better songs on
He
that record.
absolutely did. He's so funny. Like he's like, hey, I've been asked to join this band, All Systems Go with John Kastner, and I'm like, that's the band I want to join. That's
But
the band I want to
it's
be
the
in.
rock and roll thing. Well, Tom is 20 and he's
But that's my band. That's the band I want to be in.
We need some youth in this band because we're all old farts.
And he wrote like so many songs on that record, like that became big songs for them and things. And it's like, well, there's a reason. And once I heard all those songs he wrote, he goes, wrote songs like Scared of Motorbikes and stuff. I'm like, wow. Just and hearing Kastner singing in the background to that, I'm like, and he wrote those in like what, 2 days?
Totally.
So
I was so happy for him, but there's one song that the one song, it was sort of like a mid-tempo kind of one. It was like in like it was like a 6/8 or something. Roll Your Eyes, it was called. And I was always pissed that he gave that to that band. He's like, well, John helped me write that. Just like, no, it's such a good song.
I know. So, well, the other thing there was I ended up filling in for a band playing drums, and my band was mad at me, and I didn't find out till like 3 days, like 3 years later, that they were pissed at me for playing drums in this. It's like going back to petty. That's pretty petty. Like, I'm not going to play drums in this band.
Yeah,
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
it's like, but we, you know, and so, I mean, as you get older, those things become less and less of a thing, you know, or does it? I mean, do you hang on to things that maybe coulda, shoulda, wouldas?
Well, we're all little kids inside,
Yeah.
man. You know, we all feel it. It's just we have the presence of mind now to, you know, not react
Or let it out.
instinctively. It's not about letting it out. It's like you get to choose how you feel about things, and it takes a while to learn that,
Absolutely.
you know, because your first reaction is always that, you know, when there's a conflict, it's like, you know, defensive. But you realize, like, this is not a fight. This is not something that needs to be, you know, you don't need to, you know, clench your fist, make a fist and, you know, say you're going to punch somebody. It's like, this is just the problem is usually not the person, it's the situation.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. It's nice to know that you can react the way you want and you can feel the way you want and you get to, it's really a powerful thing to know that you can choose how you feel about pretty much any situation.
Yeah, and when temper takes over, and I don't think you're very
I'm not I have the smallest temper. Like I don't know, I'm pretty easygoing, as you probably
Yeah. Well,
know.
as of for aggression things, like, you know, I'm in the same boat with you. Like, sometimes people will purposely try to push my buttons, and that's their job because they can feed off it. And when people feed off of that, then they literally are just fucking with you. And then when you feed into it, then it helps them jump into that argument, which then becomes an argument. But now I find if I'm in a professional situation, like, a lot of times sarcasm just pushes it, everything aside. I just overglaze. Deal. So you're writing this TV show.
Yeah, Ollie, the boy who became what he ate. Ian Lefevre and I are doing it. He's sort of basically mentoring me through the whole thing. Just teaching me how to look at picture and just underscore the emotions. Because, you know, the first episode I saw of this thing, I'm like, what is even happening? Like, there's nothing and whatever. And then the music just brings it to life. It's like you have to help out animation because it's just 2D, you know, squiggly lines on a screen with colors. And it's the music that makes it 3D. So, you know, what instruments do you use for what moments and what characters? It's like theming characters, you know, and just learning how to write reusable stuff that you can maybe stick in the next episode somewhere. But it's also frame dependent because it's animation. It's like everything happens on a dime. It's not like a slow moving thing where you can just put a bed under it. It's like 5 seconds will take me an hour sometimes.
Yeah, just to
Just
put
to get,
together.
yeah, what chord do I go? Do I do like an augmented? Do I do a spy chord? Do I do blah, blah? It's sort of like, I don't know. And then just learning how to develop my orchestral sensibilities because,
Yeah,
you
because you're
know.
not really, because I've had Brent Belke on the show. He scores movies. I've had Justin Small. He scores television and film. And they, well, I know Justin isn't really trained, but I know Brent is. Like, he's got like
Really?
a degree. Like,
Wow. I wish I
so
had that, you know.
because you, do you find yourself like looking and researching ahead to say, oh, if I need to do something that's sort of John Williams-esque, I need to,
Oh yeah.
because there's certain ranges that certain
Oh
instruments
yeah. Like,
play.
absolutely. And certain things that certain, like, oboe is like the sort of fish sauce in the in the pad thai of the orchestra. It's like a little funkiness with the lush strings and the, you know, the confident horn. So you need a little in there
And
too.
isn't oboe the only real true tone of for tuning? Like, don't they tune to the oboe?
I
I think
don't
they do. I've done enough
know.
orchestras where the oboe goes and then everybody tunes
I
around it.
don't
So yeah, but I
know.
mean, like, you're right. It's to figure out where everything
Yeah.
goes.
But at the same time, to not be scared to just do something, even if it's wrong. It's like Ian Lefevre is just like, he told me at the end of the day, it's just songwriting. It's just instruments. It's just arrangements, ideas, melodies, harmonies, rhythms, counterpoint, all that stuff that it's the same as it's not that far removed.
from writing music.
Yeah, from writing guitar based music.
Yeah.
And I get to put guitars in there. My favorite part of the show is doing all like the Brian May style, like Queen harmonies.
Yeah.
I just want to make like a compilation of all of them.
Did you do the theme too?
No, Tom did the theme.
Tom did the theme.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Tom, I think they wanted him to do the score as well, but he's now a daddy. I don't know if you know
that. Just saw that on Facebook. Yeah. Tom Darcy, everybody, whoever who doesn't know this people.
My oldest friend.
He's been on the show too.
Mm-hmm. Congrats to Tom.
Absolutely.
And Jenny.
Maximilian.
Because of that, I got a shot at doing it, and then like we had to pitch for it. Mm-hmm. With, I think we were up against a bunch of other composers or whatever, but we landed it, and I just finished the third episode, and there's 26 11-minute episodes that I got to do, so that's gonna take me through till June.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do one a week. It's pretty scary if you look at the big picture, but it's just like, okay, I just got to do 2.5 minutes a day.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, definitely. There is, but to come up with it, and then actually the other confusing thing that for me is where do you, like the file keeping part of it.
Oh my God, I'm just waiting for that to blow up in my face.
You have to, right, because you have happy, you have sad, you have surprised. Like, how do you file manage all these little chunks of music that you've written where you could eventually because a lot of it's regurgitation.
Yeah. Well, ideally, you have a music editor do all that stuff.
Right.
But I'm the music editor on the
show.
Right,
so it has to be, but do you have, like, bullet points in your script that says, surprise, then you can start looking in a folder that says surprise?
Some shows do that. This one is just sort of like, go for it.
Yeah.
And I do.
Yeah.
And like, I have to sort of figure out what they're getting at. Like, okay, well, this character is, you know, just sort of in their own world. And then this other one is sneaking around. And then this one is off in the side, just doing their own thing. And you got to hit all of those guys. Like, they all have to little have themes. A little voice.
Yeah.
Even when there's one dominant character, there's sub characters just doing things that need to be addressed in the context of that lead voice.
Now, do you use the old Mel Blanc, the Bugs Bunny stuff? Like, because they always have like, bleep, blam,
oh yeah, burp, 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 burp. Those things are tried, tested, and true for a reason. Like little, you know, string pits things like bleep, 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 and xylophones and stuff. It's like, you know, the more you try and get away from that, it's like, it defines what cartoon scores is. Just like, the Beatles define the context of what a rock band is.
Yeah.
Whether we get as far as we get away from it and as advanced as we become, that's the framework. That's the sort of template that you can choose to break or not, but like, that's what normal is.
That's the rules.
Yeah, those are what those instruments sound like.
Mm-hmm. And you could go deeper and say that human elements, like our eyes, are used to looking at things like that and being triggered by things like that.
Yeah.
So therefore, what are you trying to do that is already working?
Yeah. So, you know, it's comforting in that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to, you know, you have tons of references if you want to go back to it, but... Yeah, it's just sort of like developing a little sort of corner where it's like, okay, this is what this world sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And just like little, like I made up a little synth patch for the stuffed animal that comes to life. And it's sort of like, it has a voice, mm-hmm. you know, and it's this like sort of like meowy little meow, meow, meow kind of mm-hmm. synth. And it's just sort of like, it's such a stupid little sound, but it's perfect for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very loose in the sound design like field of it, but I did one documentary that it was on trains.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of train stuff happening. So I had to go find a lot of samples for trains and go make samples for trains because it was like generally just recorded without a mic. So you see a train go by, you're like, oh, you should probably have a little like track noise, you know? And that's where it got really exciting because I didn't write a note, but it was like just designing all the sound effects
that's
and stuff.
Cool.
It was very cool. Like, you know, and it's something like you say, it's like for me to do that, I would need to carve a month out.
Yeah.
Where I could actually just not do anything but.
Totally.
Yeah. But one day. One day. You know, I don't know. So
So you haven't actually had like a real job for quite a while.
I can't believe it. You know, it's like I
since small.
The last job I quit. I quit selling the phones for good in 2000, and I was still doing it sort of part time and up until 2009, and then, like, I think I just got really upset at like a customer. Like, I took it out. Like, I don't know. I was just not having a good day. My boss is like, "Why do you even work here? Like, you don't need to."
That's hilarious.
I'm like, I guess I'm just, you know, I was always concerned about how can I guarantee that I'm going to pay my rent every
month?
Yeah,
just being normal too, like living somewhat of a normal existence.
It's purely financial. It's like, how do you guarantee that you're going to cover the rent every month? Because there's been, in my 20-year career, there's been months where I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Months where I had to sell my entire CD collection. Like, I never want to do that again. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to work. But it's having the trust that, like, you are good enough and hard-headed enough that you'll take whatever comes in the door and you'll make money from it.
Mm-hmm.
And even after I quit that job, I was doing web design.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I do guitar teching. I haven't done that in a while, but it's like I just sort of, I forced myself into that corner, you know, and I'm mm-hmm. like, I have no choice but to come out fighting.
Yeah, but web design had a little bit of whatever the computer science stuff you were working on, or
not really. It's like you
self-taught.
Yeah, Google University.
Yeah,
that's how I literally got it. Just I bullshitted my way until I made it. You know, and
yeah.
just like yeah, it's like cowboy coding, but it there's a need for it.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone can afford to hire like you know the A guys. The sort of like everyone with all their certs and whatever. Like some people just need like a quick and dirty website.
I believe too that the internet became consumer available over the past 5 years. With now they've have like responsive web designs and turnkey solutions making websites.
Squarespace and
even
all
WordPress to an extent.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, WordPress, I mean, when I was doing web, I was making a career out of like you know, just perverse customizations of WordPress as a framework, and just making that into whatever you want it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just liked it because it's like this is simple, seems like a good foundation, like something that is.
It's always updated.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They're always patching all the vulnerabilities or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it got to a point where like my site's like the game got so. Like even now, it's there's so many like little vulnerabilities that get you know and your sites get hacked and you get a call in the middle of the night and it's like yeah fix my website and you're tied to that anchor
mm-hmm.
and I'm sick of that mm-hmm. and that's why I'm done.
Like, yeah,
I would do web design if I had a better background in it and I could you know carve out a niche as a guy who wasn't the you know, I'm your web guy and you call me whenever there's something that needs doing.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't know. If it could be more normal, I would maybe be able to do it, but.
Right. Well, and also every time you modify something that has a WordPress and something gets updated, the hyper modification might not necessarily stick.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was pretty careful in that sense where I wouldn't modify any core stuff or whatever, but plugins tend not to play well with other plugins when they get updated sometimes.
Absolutely.
And
sometimes it just gets updated for you and you're like, I don't want you to update yet. I'm not ready.
And at the end of the day, like, I don't care about this shit. Like, I don't
mm-hmm.
want to know about plugins.
Yeah.
I just want to get the money.
Yeah. You see, for me, I was really excited about learning how that stuff worked. So I ended up going out on my own and trying to figure out how to make a website just from like the very first line of HTML code.
Isn't it cool when you finally get your, you know, this idea and then you learn how to make it into something real.
And you were my actual, my bugging post, right?
Sure.
Like call you up occasionally and go, I don't know what to do here. Cause I wanted to make like basically what I got going now actually is like a download code site, and that was like something that was the big picture.
Yeah,
and then you know actually, and then the podcast came along because you could make podcasts, and
uh-huh.
then, but now it's like
it's like, I think it's so much easier now to do stuff, but there's no real trade anymore in web design. Like, people, if they want, they could just go out and do it on their own. And that's okay, I think.
Yeah, but people don't, you know, they can do it, and it's great. Anyone can do it, but do people want to do it? Like, you can reno your own house if you want to.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It takes a certain type of person to be able to want to do that.
Yeah.
But if you're like, if you have a little donut shop up the corner, and you want to make a donut shop website,
sure,
because that's getting in the now and that's getting with the future, and make an online ordering donut website. you can do that.
You can.
10 years ago, you'd be like, okay, well, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Now I can. So it's sort of through it. It's like the big recording studios now are kind of like starving, because
I think there's always room for one or two good ones in town.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people who are just like, I have the money, I want it done right, I don't want to mess around with any of this rinky dink stuff. I want to, like Noble Street Revolution, they're multi-million dollar institutions and will stay busy because, you know, commercial stuff, big bands, there's always a market for that. But it's the mid-level studios, like the ones where like Chemical was, you know, where it's like, these are two guys, they have a shop or whatever, and, you know, they're artist friendly, but they also have the big boy tools, so you can make records that compete. It's sort of like that middle ground has been sort of divided
by home studios.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And now it's scary what you can do at home.
It's incredible, right? Yeah. Because I think that's sort of why I got out of recording. I could see it coming down Main Street that there wasn't really a market.
Open. Yeah.
Like, as soon as, and it's so funny, you're also the one that got me into like recording on hard disk.
Was I?
Yeah, when you lived across the street.
I guess I was messing around with Nuendo or something.
Game Exonic, what was the, I can't remember the name of it.
Cakewalk?
No, it was a two-track editing.
Oh, yeah, Cool Edit Pro, maybe?
Something like that.
And
so you're the one that, in Nuendo, I think you
Nuendo
brought
it, I was big into for many years.
And you brought that over, and I'm like, this is awesome. And then the guy that played bass in Andreas's band, the rich guy.
Oh,
guy
yes.
Guy with the Ducati.
Steve.
He had like a way to take ADATs and put it into like Nuendo.
Right.
So that's where I started like getting into hard disk recording.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you pushed me into that, you know, because I was like, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
I still have an ADAT machine. It's sitting in my parents' barn.
It's got a sound, you know, those ADAT converters.
It's warm.
That first first Alanis record sound. Sorry, second.
Second, yeah. Oh, yeah, the one where she's angry.
Yeah.
The angry one, yeah.
Jagged.
Jagged. Do you ever are you still doing Chaos Thing?
Yeah, technically.
Does he play around?
Kevin is not playing much lately. He's got other projects on the go that I shouldn't talk about, but he's got stuff going on that is not him touring so much.
Is he selling hash out of a rehearsal space?
Yes.
No, he's not. I just made that up.
No. But yeah,
it'd be cool if he was, though.
Point being, he doesn't, like, it's such a big ordeal to get a 6-piece band out.
Yeah.
And to rehearse 90 minutes of music that you haven't played in a while. It's sort of like, when we were touring all the time, we would never rehearse because we'd play so many shows. But now it's like we're doing a show, I think, next month. And like, I'm going to need a couple days just to
get it all back.
Yeah. Like, what pedals am I stepping on for this part? And then like, the tap dancing.
I was very proud of you seeing you play on the Olympics, though. I saw your hat.
Playing
air quotes. Unquotes.
Yeah.
But I know I saw your hat. That's why. So there's Steve.
Yeah.
I was telling my kids, because it was what, 2010?
We got styled for that.
You did?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So see that guy? That guy used to play guitar in other bands that I know.
Tom got to keep that bass. I didn't get to keep that guitar.
Really?
Yeah.
What, do you just grab it and leave with it?
No, it was like the deal. You call up Gibson and you're like, dude, I'm playing a show for the world.
Yeah.
I want a
guitar.
Yeah. If I play your product, can I keep it?
Yeah. Oh, because, you know, artist deals with Gibson are like, you can have it for 8 months and you got to give it back.
Yeah.
That's so lame.
Well, it's still handy. I mean, like, I suppose. If you need an acoustic guitar for a tour.
Yeah. We borrowed a Les Paul for this band I worked for, and it was right. The worst guitar. Never stayed in tune. Couldn't even set it up properly. There was something wrong with it. It was a lemon.
Yeah, I've never had good luck with, like, there's been one or two acoustics that have been really amazing. And I borrowed one for the Chaos Unplugged thing that we did. And that was an amazing, like a J185 or whatever. Yeah. Beautiful guitar. Had to give it back. But I don't know. It's sort of like, if you need a good instrument, go out and buy it.
Yeah.
That's sort of like, and if you want the, like, a lot of people just want those just to say, yeah, I got this from Gibson for free or whatever. Like, look at me. It's like a little perk for being a rock star. Yeah. Like, it's just sort of like, that's not a thing. It's not a thing that's like, you know, it's something, you know, if you're showing off a guitar that doesn't stay in tune to your friends, it's like, that's not really that cool.
I had a friend who was Geddy Lee's tech.
Scully?
Yeah. And
I met Scully once.
Geddy wouldn't take endorsement deals.
He wouldn't. Why would he need them?
Take,
you know,
them, because he said, well, he had WOW basses. He was endorsed by WOW and Stein, these other basses. But after he got his back with his jazz and his other, he's like, they made him a signature copy, but he never played it on stage. He goes, I don't owe them anything.
Yeah.
Because when they put you into an endorsement deal, then it's like, oh, now we got all these Fender fans are going to meet you after the show. It's like, well, fuck that. I don't want, you know what I mean? I'm not interested in meeting people because I play this bass.
Yeah.
Now, it's all these other complications involved because you now are enslaved to.
Yeah. Who cares? Things. I'm, you know, it's like he can afford whatever bass he wants.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he has a lot of, he started collecting instruments, I think, a couple of years ago. And Scully was showing me pictures of, like, Zimitis. What are they called? Zimitis? Those sort of, like, fancy, like, aluminum guitars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't.
Like, Ron Wood plays one and whatever. He got a Zimitis bass. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it. But, endorsements they're not beneficial for the artist so much as the company. And the thing
huge
that's
cash settlement.
If you're a drummer,
yeah,
endorsements kick ass because you can, you know, if you need a part replaced of your kit, which will guaranteed break, they'll ship one out for you.
Yeah.
But for guitars, it's like, you know, guitars are cheap.
Yeah.
Comparatively, like, you can buy a good guitar for $500.
You buy a Les Paul at Best Buy now.
Absolutely. And, like, I mean, I one Chaos tour, I played the entire thing on a Squire. Like,
yeah.
Squire Telly that I loved.
Yeah.
This classic
bass
vibe.
Player that plays in this band I work for, his bass is like $400. Sounds great. It's a great sound bass.
Yeah.
But we found a little ground loop on it last time we played it, so we could get rid of that.
Easy to fix.
Easy to fix, yeah.
But endorsements are, they're kind of bullshit, you know?
It's nice to have strings, though, because we were endorsed by a string company for, like, 3 years.
And totally.
Brilliant. I did buy a set of strings for, like, 5 years after. Because I had stockpiled, like, a hoarded, like, 4 boxes of actual guitar strings. Mm. And I just ran out of strings, actually, last year. But the fact still remains. Like, I don't think they're a company anymore. Stay in tune.
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard of them in a while.
No. Well, man, I'm... thank you for inviting me into your awesome house.
Anytime.
I what's the show called again?
It's called Ollie, the Boy Who Became What He Ate. I don't know when it's going to start, but...
If you have kids under the age of 10, I think it's probably a good show.
Yeah.
Or if you're really, really high.
If you're 12,
no comment. Really
no
high.
Comment.
Really high at like noon and you're watching the show and it's like, you hear the music, that's Steve Cracklow back there. Tom Darcy on the theme. Well, I wish you all the luck and success, man, because, you know, breaking free from the what normal life is sometimes is you've taken a few of those chances in your life. And
it's a journey.
It's working, right?
Yeah, well, for the moment. Yeah. Plan B is still go back to selling phones.
Yeah. I was up on Yonge Street. Is the one on Yonge Street that mall there? But by Major McKenzie? Was that the mall you worked at?
No, I was right downtown, right at the Eaton Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, man, let's say goodbye and we'll see you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's Mr. Steve Cracklow, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. Week after week after week, I have lots of great people that I have to thank. Coming up on 2 years of podcasting. And I don't know what's happening next week. I think what we'll probably try to do is get one together with Mr. Kyle Stanley, if he can get his computer together. I think it's fixed now. I saw him just the other day in person. We were recording just yesterday, actually. And we're going to do a live one, maybe. We might do... I don't know. Figured it out yet. But it will be 2 years of podcasting coming up. And Christmas is coming up. So what I might do, instead of having, is... I might just re-air my favorite episode from this past year. I think that's only fair because I need to take a few weeks off. I need to get some more guests together. Truthfully, I'm just busy. I'm overrun. I don't have any time to do anything. So I might as well just fill the time and not just take a week off, but just, you know, I have 13 episodes to air. I might as well just, you know, put something together. And that's what I'll try and do this week, everybody. So, everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. Don't forget to go to audibletrial.com/apolog to get your free audiobook, 30-day free trial. Don't forget to go to apolog.ca/Amazon to shop on Amazon. I really appreciate that when people do that. I can see what they're buying. It doesn't matter who it is because it doesn't say who bought what. So does that make sense? Yeah. So it just says when you bought the whatever. It just shows on the list. But that's cool. So how about this? Why don't we do a free shirt giveaway? Whoever shops something, show the receipt, and when it shows up on the first one to do that, show me the receipt that you purchased it, and I will send you a t-shirt, okay? Because it's Christmas. Inside Recorders, don't forget about the online mixing and the recording studio and all that stuff. Don't forget to go to apolog.ca/shop to pick up a t-shirt and discography. Follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666, like show on Facebook. Next week, we'll see you again. I don't know what it is. It's going to be something. It'll be fun. Okay, so we'll see you next week. Bye.